Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Survivor Specialist Film Will are back, and we are recapping episode number 2 of Survivor 49, A Journey Without Automatic Lost Votes. I might cry, Will. I might cry. This is the happiest I have been starting a podcast in so long. I was pumped to see that. We got to talk about what was a pretty predictable boot and a lot of changes to the format. I can say that Survivor 49, after a very lackluster premiere, feels like it actually has an identity different to the other 8 seasons of the new era. So we're going to dive into the differences now in the idol situation here. We have a tribe disadvantage, unlike really anything we've seen before in Survivor history. And we have different dynamics taking place now because of, I don't know, them listening to us. That's what I'm going to say. So pat me on the back or something. I don't know. Will, what do you think?
Also a very, very different Ancient Voices theme song to open the show. I mean,
very.
Often seasons have some variety, especially in the older seasons when we'd go to different countries, they would use some instruments from whatever culture we're surrounding ourselves in. Here we've been in Fiji, I don't know how many seasons in a row, but we decided for whatever reason, 49, we're going to like have the most different sound. Like, we're not just going to add in some instruments that sound a bit different in the background. We are going to change like the actual melody of the theme song. So like Survivor 49 is kind of planting its flag around saying, hey, we are not just the 49th season. We're not just a repeat. We're not just the ninth season of the new era. At least maybe.
I feel like they're taking chances, and whether this is because 50 is on the horizon and they know that the vibe of the show there you go, Nate, in case you're listening, vibe of the show needs to be different. They are doing different things now, and it feels like they're trying to get ahead of just changing it up with 50 and 51 and all that and making a big deal out of it, because I think that's one of the biggest mistakes they made coming back from COVID was drop the 4, keep the 1, we're starting over. But what you started with wasn't good. You made too many over the top game deciding decisions, whether it's Do or Die or the Hourglass, just two of the dumbest decisions in the history of the show, to name a few. This time they're not making a big deal out of it. Jeff has been going around in publicity tour here talking about how the heat is going to be extreme for everybody early on. And that's all he's really been hyping up, to the point where I'm sitting here saying, after what we watched last week, man, this show is going to be stale and boring as we continue through. And instead, I almost have to give Jeff credit here for showing some reservations and being a little bit quieter about what we're actually going to see and not overplaying all of the changes that were going to take place. Because I will say, I very much enjoyed this tonight. And I don't know if that's just because it was pretty much everything I wanted it to be in terms of changes to the format. But maybe I won't feel the same way in episode 3 or 4 or 5. But coming out of tonight, I am feeling very, very good because they're not doing the same old shtick. And in terms of the idol question, we kind of got the answer tonight of they mixed up how idols are going to work and the timing of how you're going to find idols. I don't know if that's a net positive. I don't think it's something you can do all the time, but I don't know. Well, I'm positive. Are you going to come in and be like, this is the worst thing I've seen since season 48?
No, I think this episode was a significant improvement over the premiere. And, you know, you had said last week, the premiere felt kind of long. It felt like we were dragging a bit. That did not happen tonight. And obviously we have 30 fewer minutes, I should say, but it felt like well-paced. It felt like we moved through this episode, felt like we got a lot of information. But Phil, just to kind of push back on you a little bit, it sounds like you are giving 49 maybe too much credit for format changes, where I feel like these are fairly subtle tweaks here and there, in that they aren't these like overwhelmingly large changes by production by Jeff and changes to the format. I think they're small and they're subtle and they're absolutely worth talking about, especially when you have a Survivor podcast. I'm with you that these changes are real and tangible, but to say like, wow, they've really taken the format and mixed it up with 49, I think it's a little early to say that. We're only 2 episodes in, and yes, I appreciate the tweaks, and we will talk about them individually, but like, these are pretty minor, Phil. I think you might
not
be getting a little bit too excited. You might
no,
be getting
not
a little
the
too
not
excited.
Losing your vote on the journey. That is a massive, massive, massive improvement. That
okay,
is
okay. Well, can
huge.
I push back a little
huge.
Bit on that?
No.
No, we can't have a no. conversation. Podcast over.
You asked.
This is the best. This is the best episode we've ever seen of the show. Phil
Since
is stoked.
When do you ask me?
That's gonna wrap it up
back.
Here.
I just
want to make sure you have anything else to say before I go in.
I have so much positive to say about that journey that I feel like what I'm going to be able to kind of pinpoint where I want to go, whether you start coming at me with crazy negatives or not. Like, still,
I'm not
going to
get negative. I'm just kind of like pushing back in terms of your assessment being like they've totally reworked the format and how this show works now, which I think, for one, far too early to say that. Episode 2. We might get a journey in episode 4 where everyone loses their votes automatically and only one person is able to win their vote back. Like, that is fully on the table. Mm-hmm. Also, my problem with losing votes has not really been the act of losing a vote in and of itself. What really drove us crazy, and I believe this was 48, maybe it was 47. Hey, maybe it's been multiple seasons here in the new era. It's where there's a challenge, a reward challenge, or maybe it's one of these episodes where the immunity challenge happens earlier in the episode. The winning tribe picks two people, one from each other tribe. You guys are going on the journey. They say, Will, you won the challenge. Who are you sending to go on the journey? I'm picking Phil. Phil goes to the journey. Phil opens up the envelope. You have to risk your vote. You have to play the game. You don't have a choice. Phil plays the game. Phil loses his vote. And by no decision from Phil whatsoever, Phil now doesn't have a vote, and he had no say in the matter. He had no agency over his own game. Here, the boat comes up, and they are asking the players, do you want to go on the journey? Matt says, I'm here to play. Let's go. Jake's like, I want to go. Anyone else want to go? I want to go. I want the advantage. Like, let's go. Let's go. We see Jawan being like, no one else. Like, these are people, the three people that decided to go, that know how New Era Survivor works. They know the risk. They know the reward. They know that this can happen, that you can lose your vote, and I'm okay with that. So that would be number one for me. My big issue was never the loss of votes. It was the mechanic in which we were losing votes when people didn't have a choice. They absolutely had a choice here. So if there had been votes lost, it really would not have bothered me because these three people all volunteered to go. That's number one. Number two, Phil, I know Jawan went with disadvantage for the challenge, but one of his options was literally to have one of the people who lost the journey lose their vote. So it's not
I have arguments.
Redemption change. We're just like, we're done with losing votes. It's not going to happen. That was literally one of the options that could have happened.
It's not a lost vote. It's a stolen vote. Those are two different things.
Literally through a mechanic of the journey. We are not whitewashing Survivor right now. I mean, like, they've totally gotten rid of lost votes when literally the option was to lose a vote from a journey, Phil.
Here's what I like, okay? And here, I get where you're coming from a little bit here, but I'm now going to push back. I like that the players are making decisions again. And I feel like if we get negative about the players making decisions too much, they're going to say, see, that didn't work. All the podcasters were whining and bitching and the internet was complaining and all that. No, the players are making decisions. And here's what I also loved about this journey. What is fun about watching people do an impossible challenge or watching people roll dice or watching people spin a ship wheel to decide yes or no? Nothing, literally nothing is fun about watching any of that. What's fun about this challenge? You have three people competing and they are deciding who to throw their coconuts at, knowing that the person who wins is going to get some sort of advantage. So now the players are also in their mind saying, who would I almost be most okay with winning this challenge? There's a bit of a choice element going on there. It's not just you're physically better than me, you're better at a puzzle, you finished first, you rolled 7 and I rolled 6, you got the ball that was a different color. This is a different kind of challenge. And I know that we did something similar last season when Star lost her vote, but this one was a lot more, there's still some sort of skill involved. And you can team up on one person, but that person being out doesn't mean the other two people automatically win, because there's still going to be one winner of this challenge. Whereas a lot of times when they go on these journeys, we see these types of challenges where one person walks out automatically losing their vote and the other three are able, or the other two are able to team up on the one person. So I appreciated that you didn't get that here. I also love that Jawan did have a choice. He has a choice to steal a vote from somebody else, or he can get a disadvantage for a tribe. And what's good about the option to steal a vote from somebody else, as opposed to them just straight up losing their vote, it creates drama. It creates conflict. If that person ends up losing their vote and now Jawan has another, they know Jawan made this decision against them. They know that Jawan is the one who stole it. And so I appreciate that Jawan had decisions to make, and that, like you said, the people who chose to go out there, yes, they were making that decision, but everything again was decision-based. It wasn't just totally luck-based. Everything had a reason. And that's what I want to watch my players do. I want to watch my players make choices. That is what Survivor is all about. And that is what that's what the New Era, especially season 48, was missing. Thomas and Bianca went home because they rolled the wrong dice or something along those lines. I don't want that. I want decisions. And this episode is a massive step in the right direction of them tweaking. Yes, they feel it's minor tweaks that feel major, because they're getting rid of some of the dumbest decisions they've made, in my opinion, in the history of the show.
Sure. And I think there is a wide spectrum of journeys that we've gotten in the new era. I think there are a couple where it's like roll dice and it's literally all luck, or pull into a bag, literally all luck. There have been quite a few of these more prisoner dilemma styles where you have a conversation before you go off and make a decision. Who do you think's doing what? You're trying to at least manipulate the other people. You're trying to predict. You are going to take a risk. Like, if I put my ship wheel towards risk my vote, and someone else does that too, I know I'm risking my vote. Like, I know the mechanics. I know how they work. I find the ship wheel actually more interesting than tonight's journey. I think tonight's journey, what you want out of a challenge like this is a pretty simple mechanic where you're targeting other players. You want the confessionals to be about, hey, I really don't want Jake to win. Jake's this big buff guy. We don't need him having any power if we hit emerge, right? Or, man, Jawan, he looks like he knows this game inside and out. If he gets some sort of advantage, he's going to know how to use it. And you're going to want two people teaming up on one person, deciding they don't want that person to win. We did not get a lick of rationale of why they threw coconuts at who, so much so it looked like they were just alternating because they didn't want to piss anyone off, which is the right move here. Like, you're meeting two strangers for the first time. You actually don't even really have a reason to target one person over the other because you don't know them at all. And the worst part about this is you only have two options. So if I'm deciding between Phil and Alexa and I throw my coconut at Phil, it's not like Phil has any chance to be like, oh my gosh, you really are gunning for me. It's almost like the advantage today with the Yellow Tribe, when the Yellow Tribe's like, that's them attacking us. It's like, yeah, they have two choices. And one of the tribes has five people and hasn't won a challenge. Like, the choice, when you only have two options, you targeting someone with a coconut means literally nothing. And I can tell you all about this. For anyone who's seen House of Villains, when we do challenges on House of Villains, if we have a targeting style game, it's always when we're individual, we need at least like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people, because then you have an array of possibilities. When I choose someone out of seven, okay, there must be a reason why I'm going for you. When you play these games with three people, and again, House Villains, the way the format works there, you have redemption challenges where three people are on the hit list and one person's going to win. It doesn't hit as hard when you only have two options. And we got that's why none of the confessionals were even based upon that decision making. So I feel like that kind of fell flat for me. In some of the earlier prisoner dilemma games where you actually could lose a vote, I actually find to be much more interesting than this game where this was just physical tossing coconuts in a basket. There was no social strategy to it whatsoever.
Well, here's what the difference was, though. And here's why I also think this was a step in the right direction. It's because this challenge you were playing to win, not to not lose. And I feel like a lot of the other prisoner dilemmas is, I just don't want to be the person who loses my vote or who has this happen. A lot of times in those prisoners' dilemmas, from what I remember, is you would go to the island and somebody be walking out of there with, like, two people be walking out of there with nothing and one person be walking out of there with a disadvantage. Very rarely was somebody walking out of there with an advantage while other people were losing. So I feel like in this challenge, the goal is to win. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but I feel
the way ship wheel. No, again, there's been a wide variety of journeys. Now we're our ninth season into the new era, and there's been journeys in every single season. So there's been, like, it's fine to be confused on some of these. Ship wheel specifically was, you could either risk your vote or keep your vote. And if you keep your vote, you're opting not to play the game. And again, that's a choice. You're like, I'm not going to risk my vote. I'm going to keep it. If two people keep their vote and one person risks their vote, the person who risks their vote gets an extra vote. If two people risk it or more, if all three risk it, then all of them lose their vote.
Yeah.
So this game did not do it for me. It was purely physical. It seemed like there was no rhyme or reason as to why the players were targeting other players. Because
you're trying to win, so every time you're kind of moving down the line. And people are saying that it was unfair because how the person in the middle was going to get hit every time and then throw at the sides. You had to shoot from in front of the person's basket. If you watch it, they're moving which spot they're in when they're shooting. They weren't all shooting. They weren't lined up 1, 2, 3 and you had to shoot. You were shooting from in front of the person's basket that you were trying to aim at.
I think the only way you could balance that out is either to arc it, have like a semicircle, and then have stations of your own coconuts so it's sort of equidistant. Mm-hmm. But also you could just say, hey, there's three lanes, one person's going to be in the middle because that's how it has to be, and we're going to randomize it, and that's how it goes. And
like, yeah, and the middle was the easier one to get to for people. But what I'm saying is, you know, they didn't set it up where Jawan was always standing on the left and the other one was standing in the
middle.
No,
but that's actually the issue, because like that means whoever's net is in the middle means their shooting lane, they're like the rope where they had to shoot from, that section's in the middle. And so that means you're on average closer to that shooting lane and you're going to get more coconuts.
Yeah, but that's still fairer though than Jawan has to shoot every time from the left, so now he can't even reach the one on the right.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was still a more fair advantage than the other. And Nick Snyder in here is trolling me right now because he's probably crying over the Ravens being 1-3 and Lamar being hurt. Phil, that's such a bad take too. You always have to pick the tribe disadvantage in that spot. That information is way too public. I haven't even given my take yet on what I think the decision should have been at the end of this. I haven't even said it. I mean, I'm just getting ripped because
I guess you're not getting ripped as much
it's
as
only Nick, because Nick,
I'm getting praised.
So crying about the Ravens absolutely being terrible at football. But here's my thing. I still think, like, we can complain, we can cry. This is Will. That's Will's dad, everybody, if you're wondering. Matthew C. That's Will's dad. We can nitpick this, but to me, this is a big step in the right direction. Also, visually, way more appealing. The ship wheel thing has gotten stale, so I understand where you're coming from. Where
they did ship wheel in 41, 42, and then 43, 44 had the bags, which is like a similar mechanic but was different. And then since 45 on, we've had just like kind of random types of like the Jelinski Maria Tevin game from the premiere of 46. Like, I thought that was interesting. Also, liked we had. What was it? The Mario Party game last season. I know it wasn't like the most exciting thing to watch, but to me, Honeycomb Havoc. I mean, that was at least like some sort of social strategy where you're going in line, you're trying to time it out, and you actually have to talk amongst yourselves, and like one person's going to get absolutely screwed. And I think it was Star that got screwed. I fully enjoyed that. I thought the one where they had to play Jenga stack cards. That's boring as hell because it's just physical. There's no nuance or no intrigue with your social strategy.
And again, that one you're playing not to lose. This one you're playing to win. So that's again, and I think people do want to see something.
At this point, if you're playing to win and if that's what you like about it, shouldn't this be fill up your own bucket and everyone has their own lane and then whoever gets theirs first falls down? I know you lose the targeting aspect, but again, we got no flavor, no lick of explanation on the targeting whatsoever through this challenge.
Yeah, no,
you're not going to get that with three people playing a targeting game. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no, and that's okay for me. I think that this was a big, big, big improvement. And I was going to make a point like 5 minutes ago, but you just kept interrupting the point. I can't remember what the point was at this point.
I asked if I could go.
I kept saying I want to put, and then you just kept going, and there was no way that I was going to be able to get in. I still think though that I do remember the point. I think that a lot of people, viewers, would rather watch something that you're actually watching rather than just hearing people say the same lines over and over and over and over again. So that's where I do think that this is a bit of a breath of fresh air. You're saying you would like to you'd like to hear maybe more of those confessionals. I think there's a lot of people who are tired of hearing those confessionals, and I think that's where this is okay.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you were never going to get those confessionals when you're choosing between two people. The interview person's like, okay, were you targeting Matt or were you targeting Jawan? And Jake's like, I don't know either of them. I was just alternating and looking at whose basket and was lower, and I was just targeting that. And it's like, has nothing to do with who you want to win or lose this challenge. And that's kind of the design of the game when you're designing a targeting challenge. And like, it's just not going to work when you only have three people. That was my issue with it.
So let's go to the fact of now Jawan wins, whether Will likes it or not, Jawan wins. My winner pick wins. That's Everybody's fine. Over here saying that he's drawing dead. I don't know about that. So now Jawan has a decision to make. He can either steal somebody's vote. He'll have an extra vote and that person will not have a vote. Or he can get a tribe disadvantage from one of the other tribes at the immunity challenge. Which would you choose in the situation? Being that it's day 5 or 6, one person is out of the game when he's making this choice.
Yeah, this is another one. This is another part of the reason why I didn't love this journey as much as you did. You keep touting that this journey is full of decisions, or at least this episode allowed the players to make decisions for themselves and the game wasn't acting on them. But honestly, Phil, I kind of feel like this goes into the hourglass bucket where the show gives you a choice and there really is only one choice to make.
I think
the tribe disadvantage of the challenge is almost always your right choice. And I very rarely see a time in which you actually want to steal someone's vote. And here's why. One, if you are in a terrible spot on your tribe, let's say it's 5-1 or 4-2, that's when you would yell at me and say, absolutely, you want the extra vote. That's going to help you. But if it's 4-2 and you get an extra vote, you're not getting a steal a vote. Yes, you're stealing a vote, but you're not stealing a vote from somebody you're voting with. And that's what makes a steal a vote so valuable, is that you're taking away someone's vote that is voting at tribal council with you. So if I'm Jawan and I'm down 4-2, let's say, and that's what the numbers are on his tribe, he's down 4-2. If he takes Jake's vote, because Jake's a big guy, he's going to get to the merge and he's going to snipe all of us, as Annie was saying, I get back. Great. I know I have an extra vote. And now it's 4-3. Hell yeah. Great. Amazing. No. If you know you're on the bottom, you absolutely want to increase your chance of winning the immunity challenge and give yourself more time and give yourself a way to ingratiate yourself with your tribe and actually have a chance at fitting in. Now, you could say, Will, Jawan doesn't know he's on the bottom here. He thinks he's in a good position. And if you think you're in a good position, why at all would you risk your good position if you're in a majority to piss someone off on the other tribe that they know you won the challenge? It's not like some of these journeys where you make a decision in private and one of you wins and then later you're told you lost a vote. You're like, huh, I wonder what happened there. This is like Jawan won. You're going to get a steal a vote from and you're going to know that was Jawan. And now you've made an enemy on another tribe for no reason because you are in a majority on your tribe. Why risk that? When again, the tribe disadvantage at a challenge is public and it buys you good grace with your tribe. This is almost always the right move. I can hardly think of one scenario in which an extra vote or a steal a vote from when you're not even stealing the vote of someone you're going to tribal council with is worth it here. And it's all public too. This is all going to come out. This is not anything private or secretive about this. If you steal someone's vote, you are putting a target on your back for later in the game.
I'm going to crack my neck. You ready?
Go, let's go, Phil. We're really disagreeing.
Imagine how much more fun this is than last week when we're sitting here and I said to Will beforehand, you think we can make it an hour? I don't know.
Think we can talk about the premiere for 30 minutes?
I know. You ready? Okay, here we go. Yeah, as Nick Snyder says, Dak Prescott voice. Yeah, here we go. All right. I actually agree with you. I think that the tribe disadvantage is where you got to go on this. But here's the thing. You just compared this to the hourglass twist, and I think that's a terrible take. I think that's awful. I agree with most of your sentiment, but you are making a giant leap in comparing this to the hourglass, I think. The hourglass is always 1,000%. Do you want to save yourself, or do you want to save six other people? Of course you're going to save yourself, and you're overturning the fact that the other people want immunity. That's the stupidest twist ever. And that one you do 100% out of 100%. This one, though, here's my thing. Sorry, I gotta say this. This one, I think you always take the tribe disadvantage, but I think because of the different personalities that they normally put on the show, they don't anymore. Every personality is essentially the same now. But because of the different personalities you generally put on a reality TV show and you're trying to create drama, you're going to get people who react in these situations in a pressure type situation differently, right? And so you're going to get people who are going to go selfishly and say, I want to play this game like a villain. I'm going to do it this way. Or I kind of like those two guys. My tribe hasn't been good to me. I'm going to take the steal a vote and I'm going to get whatever. You're going to get people who aren't going to think rationally and logically. And I think you're a very logical, rational thinker. I'm a logical, rational thinker. But there are going to be people who want to figure out how they can make this a big move. What can they do that's super dramatic? This is not 100 out of 100 like the hourglass list. This is probably closer to 80 out of 100. I think that if you did this on a season like Ghost Island, I would bet you that 5 or 6 of the people would have gone with the extra vote. And Chris Noble is one of them.
Maybe it's a casting thing. I'm just trying to think of like a logical scenario where it's beneficial for your game. And that is how we're casting the new era. A lot of gamers, a lot of Survivor fans, a lot of people that look at the macro of everything, not just like, okay, I get this one little vote for one tribal council, but like, how does this affect me overall? If I'm sitting at final three, does this help me get to final three? Does this help me with your votes? Like all of that, I am a hard press, Phil, and maybe you can do it for me. In what scenario is it optimal gameplay here to steal a vote from a stranger on another tribe when they know 100% it's you? Again, if you're in the majority, you don't need to. And if you're in the minority, one extra vote on a six-person tribe isn't going to do anything for you.
There it is. I think this is where it hits. Zach, with any blue player, would want it next week. I actually think they did this too early in the season.
Next week. That's next week.
No, but I think if you have five people on your tribe, this is actually much more of a decision, because let's say the first vote didn't go the way you thought. And now you feel like, okay, I have one person I can work with. I'm outnumbered 3-2. Let's say Alex is over there and he has Annie, who he's working with. Let's say he was kind of aligned with Nicole and he didn't see that coming. He's outnumbered 3-2. Now you steal the vote. I actually think what the interesting dynamic here might be, that isn't actually an interesting dynamic, Will, in the long run, and we can talk about this a little bit, is you're not stealing from your own tribe. You're stealing from a different tribe. And I think that's where this becomes kind of different than anything else we've seen Survivor do with this, because you're not now stealing from somebody on your tribe to make it a 3-2 in your favor instead of a 3-2 in a disadvantage. You're tying it up at 3-3. It does become useful there, though. So I think if you were on the five-person tribe, you had a much more likelihood that somebody would choose that twist, that advantage. And I don't know if it would work, but I do think that that's where you would do it. And I just think they did this too early. You shouldn't have done this at Final 17. This should have been planned for Final 15.
I don't know. I feel like if you're on the losing tribe, if you're in the five, like the tribal advantage or disadvantage for immunity is like even more valuable, because you need to not lose. Mm-hmm. You've been struggling with challenges. Like you need to gain some way of beating these other tribes in a challenge, and you're being served one on a silver platter. Mm-hmm. Like I still think, because if it's, I guess, in that very specific scenario where you're on the bottom of 3-2, but then that the best you're doing there is tying it up 3-3. So it's not even like it's getting you an extra vote is not doing a lot for you.
Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, then, they call this a steal a vote. In reality, it's an extra vote in the tribal phase. It wouldn't really become a steal a vote until you got to the merge, because then you have a vote and somebody else doesn't. What would have made it worth it for you if they were going to do this again and have this kind of decision?
I think a normal steal, like you earn a steal vote, I think is that fixes
that you can
then, use then you could actually a steal vote lets you like flip the majority. Like it lets you really dictate. You basically you're getting two extra votes because you're adding one to yourselves and you're minusing one from someone else. It's a net of two. Whereas just one extra vote, it's like if you're up a half game in baseball,
you know, doesn't mean
it's
anything.
Like, doesn't matter. That's the extra vote. A full game is a steal vote. So.
Yeah. So, okay, I hear where you're coming from with that, and I think you're probably right there. What did you think about the disadvantage that was given to the yellow tribe in this challenge?
When I first heard it, I was like 20 pounds per player. I'm like, for an obstacle course based challenge, that is a significant disadvantage. And then when Jeff goes, and you got to do 10 keys, I was like, oh man, they're really punishing this tribe for just having a disadvantage played on them, which, hey, I mean, make it worth it, I guess. And I guess that's the other thing that's kind of tough with the you get to play disadvantage on a tribe. We've seen disadvantages and advantages at immunity challenges, you know, throughout many seasons of the show. It's like there's a wide range of where they land. Like sometimes they're game breaking and sometimes they don't do anything. I think here the yellow tribe just is beastly, because they end up getting first place in the challenge. And I know a lot of that has to do with blue absolutely shrinking the puzzle portion, but man, I thought that was pretty significant, but good for yellow, man. Like, hell yeah. Get the disadvantage and get first place. Get the reward. They deserve it.
Yeah, it's so interesting how this played out, because yellow won anyway. I'm impressed with yellow for sure on this. And I wonder if now, let's say on season 51, they do this, right? Because season 50 is already filmed, so there's no way. But season 51, they do something like this. Are people going to be less inclined to go with the tribe disadvantage because they just watched the tribe that got this for the first time win? And I do think it was a pretty significant disadvantage. Somebody here had said, where is this? I don't know where it went, but somebody had said that the 20 pounds, oh, frozen lava reflector, I guess. The 20 pounds were brutal. The keys weren't. But the keys can hang you up for a long time in this type of challenge when you're trying to speed through and all of a sudden you push one further than the finger you meant to push it. And now all of a sudden you have 10 keys that you're working through a second time. That can be a little chaotic. And especially if you're already trailing because you had to carry the weight. But really, red sucked at the physical part and blue was so bad at the puzzle that yellow was able to overcome this disadvantage. I think it was the right choice. And I respect that Survivor's going this route. When I first heard it, I had flashes of Medallion of Power in my head. And all of a sudden I started saying, well, oh, is this just going to be so stupid that it's going to be obvious what's going to happen? I was very pleased that that was not the scenario. And I do think that the Yellow Tribe had to overcome and be the best tribe to win, which again might be a way for Survivor to be saying, hey, instead of voting out stronger people early, you really do have to consider keeping them. I know 48 had strong people that made it very deep in the game, obviously. But for a while here in the new era, it's become so meta that a lot of times it is the nerdier, smaller people who are taking over. And maybe this is a way to try to level that out and say, hey, you never know. You could get a tribe disadvantage in 2 weeks. Do you really want to vote out the Jake of your tribe?
Well, we saw Annie completely 180 on that very choice.
Yeah.
Being like, we need to win a challenge. We cannot afford to lose Jake. I don't know how much this will have like influence on the meta of the game. I think we see these like one shot, cute little ideas from Survivor. And I thought this one worked. And honestly, Phil, maybe the most impressive part is that even if Blue does the puzzle normally, not for the race through it, just like use their lead and get the puzzle done first. Yellow still beat the red tribe. So yeah, Yellow is going to be fine no matter what. Even though I do think it was a significant disadvantage, I don't think this will change the way people think about playing the game moving forward. I think this is just a nice little one-off thing. Second episode of the season, just a little mix up here.
So now here's my next question to you. Do you just bury the blue tribe if you get this option, or would you have done it to the yellow tribe too?
I'm with Juwan's decision here to go after yellow. I think it's just more of a politically okay decision to make. And I know we had Sophie be like, no, that's BS. They're coming at us because we're full strength. And it's like, yeah, well, sure. What if you are? Again, like when you're choosing between one of two options, it doesn't sting as hard. There's 10 tribes out there and they pick yellow. Okay, sure. You're going after yellow, but like, Why the way he explained it too, he's like, man, they're really down. They don't even have flint or machete. Like, why would we go? Like, what does that do for them? If the blue tribe keeps losing, obviously it's better if yellow loses. And I think doing the rational thing is often the best thing because you're not then raising any eyebrows. I think anyone on yellow, you even heard Christina go, shocker. Like, of course they played it on us. And I think if that's the sentiment from yellow, then they probably can't hold it against Juwan. Whereas like blue tribe would hold it against Juwan.
Yeah.
Well, here, like, what the hell, dude? We didn't even win our like machete and pot and flint in the Rizzo versus Alex challenge. And like, then we didn't win the coconut bag toss. Everyone knows that. Like, what are you doing? Like, there's no reason to raise any eyebrows.
You know, let me make a little counter argument here. Bury them, and here's why. In the new era with three tribes, if a tribe goes in with six, they almost always get wiped out. They become the easy target. This even goes back to something like Kageon, right? You had the beauty tribe with a good amount of numbers hit that merge, and the beauty tribe just gets wiped out.
It goes back to season 25.
Yeah, there you go. With the name of the tribe, I can't remember.
Matt Singh.
Well, Matt Singh loses early and then yellow has the lead. They go before the Kalabaos for some of them, at least. I feel like in this situation, you don't want to be the tribe that has the lead over the other tribes. If you hit a merge or a swap situation, you become the target. You still kind of become the target if you're Juwan anyway, but you're put in an impossible situation. I think I'm burying the blue tribe and saying, get out of here. Now, if we swap, yellow's just as threatening as we are. If we both go in 6-6, if we merge, hopefully we lose one person before they do. I feel like I'd probably be going at the Blue Tribe here. Now, that's a lot easier to say when I'm sitting in this chair talking to a microphone, looking at Will and trying to play devil's advocate a little bit. But I do think that going for the Blue Tribe is maybe the smarter move. And that's what I thought Juwan was going to do in the moment.
I think you could make that argument, but we have seen some winners come from successful early tribes. Didn't Erica not go to tribal council at all in season 41? Didn't Gabler, they lost one challenge pre-merge? I think, like, yes, we've seen a lot of successful players come from tribes that get decimated early. I think a lot of that's because they get screen time and they get, like, experience, and then they become not threatening. So, like, oh, you only have two other people or one other person from your starting tribe. We're not worried about you. So, sure, there's that argument. I think the argument of, like, really pissing off five people, because, like, what if Blue wins? And then you have five enemies that are, like, not going to want to work with you now or hold a grudge.
They were bitter about it. Yellow was bitter about it. So you could be saying
you're sure. I think Yellow, anyone with a brain on Yellow is going, yeah, that was the right choice. Where we have not lost a single challenge yet. And not only, like, they've gotten like first place in every challenge. Like, and then Yellow ends up winning too, which is good, yeah. I guess, for Juwan. And then he got immunity also. So Yellow is not going to be mad at Juwan whatsoever because they got the fishing reward and immunity.
Yeah.
So they can't be mad.
Yeah, Juwan, this worked out as perfectly as it could for Juwan. And I know a lot of people at the beginning were saying, Phil, your winner pick took a lot of hits tonight. It felt like Juwan had a full arc of redemption in this one episode. I mean, Savannah has a confessional where she says, this might have just bought him some extra time on our tribe when it was looking like he was going to be the boot.
Yeah, I mean, she said that. I don't know if it was a good thing, but she's like, perhaps if we don't end up losing the challenge, he'll have a few extra days.
No, I feel like
that's what she said. She said Juwan is still the boot, but maybe this helped. This giving a disadvantage to another tribe can help us win, and us winning will keep him around for.
I feel like what was implied here is that there's still this might help it work a little bit better in his favor. I feel like that's the case.
What you picked up was Savannah saying because he opted for this choice to throw a disadvantage at another tribe, thus helping our own tribe.
Yeah,
that if we go to tribal council, they're going to vote Sage off instead of Juwan.
Maybe, yeah.
That's not. You got to rewatch that one back, Phil. I'm sorry. Because I paid for whatever reason that stuck out to me. The way she worded it was like, yeah, maybe he has a few more days. If we win the challenge, he has a few more days. And this advantage will help us win the challenge because we're hurting another tribe. So that was the same.
You know what, though? He just bought himself a couple extra days, which means a couple extra days for Sage to say something stupid that's going to piss off Savannah, as we're seeing in the preview for next week. I'm just saying. So
for Sage to talk about her bladder.
She had to pee.
We've heard a lot we've heard burps, got the throw up, got the water. We've got a lot of bodily functions going on.
Yeah.
In season 49.
What about RZ says it here. If Juwan didn't throw things out of Savannah's bag, sure. What? How do you mess this up? He threw the entire bag, emptied the entire bag to put sticks in it. You didn't realize that you don't wear those clothes, that you don't have
the shoes? I don't think he emptied the bag first. I think maybe he took out some of the bigger things like the water bottle, which is like the biggest, heftiest thing. Maybe he took that out. All the water bottles look the same. And Savannah's clothes, they look like they're pretty thin, light, beachy clothes that are gonna, you know, be fairly small inside a bag.
They're like women's bikinis and
feels empty.
Yeah.
And then he goes and collects firewood. What was so weird with the firewood was like, okay, use the bag, sure. And then we get all this idle suspicion from Savannah, and she's sharing this with Shannon about how he's off and he's putting sticks in a bag, like she's never seen that before. What's going on? And we don't hear anything from Juwan being like, I was just getting firewood, or, oh yeah, here's my trick of how I'm going to look for idols. I'm always going to have firewood at my back. So whenever I get caught, it will look like I've been, you know, having firewood. Like, there is a story there where if you always have firewood on you, if anyone catches you out and about, you have this like bag of evidence on your shoulder. Like, look, I've been collecting firewood. Was that what he was doing? We don't know. Like, we never heard. We never got Juwan's perspective on that. And maybe that's why people are perhaps giving you heat for your winner pick, Phil, because it wasn't a good look that we never got to hear his defense.
Hey, all I'm going to say is you put sticks in the bag, you put palm fronds on the person. Batting 1,000 right now, putting palm fronds on people. Maybe putting sticks in a bag is also batting 1,000. That's all I'm going to say. Everybody wrote off Gabler after he did that. Just saying. Just saying.
That's still one of the most iconic winner moves in it's the unbelievable. Of the show.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
Thought you were cold. It's a blanket here. I'm just going to put palm fronds on you while you're already sleeping.
I truly think, too. I think people are saying you're right about the Savannah thing in here. I think I missed that because that's when the Yankees won. And I was like watching that on my phone while also watching Survivor there in the bottom of the ninth inning. So just saying this, or the top of the ninth inning. I think that's why I missed that. So you're right. Everybody in here is saying you're right. I'm going to have to rewatch that back and hear exactly what you said before tomorrow's podcast at 5 p.m. with Once Upon an Island and Blake. We're doing it with Once Upon an Island for anybody who listens to Once Upon an Island stuff.
Wes. All right.
There you go. I wanted to throw that in there. It seemed like a good segue. Let's talk about the Yellow Tribe. We didn't hear from Jason tonight. Christina was screaming her lungs out at the challenge. Good for her having the pipes. We are barely getting stuff from this tribe. It feels like this tribe is going to remain intact for a while. But what we are hearing is Sophie's going to go home. Matt's a little sketchy. MC's playing both sides a little bit.
Good night from MC.
It was after a really bad premiere for MC.
Yeah. Yeah. This was like watching the previously on. They show you the dynamics of the blue tribe. They show you the dynamics of the red tribe. And then the episode starts. And it was just like, wow, you guys are just totally owning that we did not get the dynamics of the yellow tribe at all last week. Yeah. We do have another core four coming together. I don't know how many times we've heard core four, but it seems to be quite a bit. I guess on a six-person tribe to start, and we keep getting that over and over, that is going to happen. You need four to have a majority. So we do have Matt, Steve, Christina, and they decide to bring in MC as their fourth. Matt does not use tact here whatsoever, and MC immediately goes, okay, how long have you had this three-person thing? I feel like I'm the fourth, but doesn't let the other three people know that, gracefully accepts to be in this alliance, and she tells us, the audience, I'm a little bit skeptical of this, which, hey, good spot for MC. She can go with this four if she wants to, or she's already kind of hinted to Sophie, I'm not really with them. Let's see if we can figure something else out. So
this is it's actually happened twice tonight. There were two different instances of somebody pretty much revealing your fourth in this group of four. And that was Jeremiah also said it on the Blue Tribe where said,
we have to get into this hunt too. And the vote, this is a meaty episode too. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Jeremiah realized this too. And I think if you're going on Survivor, for all the meta that goes into this, be aware of when you're saying the three of us want to bring you in, or the three of us were doing this together. Do you want to be a part of it? Of course, MC is going to have her qualms with how this was handled. The problem is, I don't know what Jason is doing. So I don't know if they can get to four, right? Maybe this is the instance where the steal a vote would work, because Christina, MC, and Jason are a group of three going up against Matt, Steven, and Sophie. Maybe now MC goes over there. She gets the steal a vote. She can make a 4-3 vote. There's your actual answer to that question, Will. On a 3-3 split, get the fourth.
Yes, if it's tied 3-3, that is maybe the one time where you're like, yeah, give me the one extra vote. And this would have been for the yellow tribe, but it wouldn't have been Matt.
Yeah. It would not have been Matt. Yeah. So in this situation, I thought MC did exactly what you're supposed to do and be sketched out by the fact that you're going to be fourth place, because you don't want to be fourth place. That's for sure. You know, fourth, you don't sit at final.
Yeah. I think what you do if you're Matt is, I feel a really good connection with you. I was talking to who's in this alliance again. We saw. So I know Steve and Christina.
It was Steve, Christina,
Matt.
And then Matt, they brought in MC.
Right. So if I'm Matt going up to MC, I say, look, I have a good thing with Steven. I really like you. Steven says he wants to bring Christina. I don't really, they're kind of a duo, but I'm with you. And then like, you're kind of coming into it with like two duos and you're making some sort of 2-2 thing. Or who has the best relationship with MC at this point? Clearly it's not Matt. If MC is skeptical, maybe have Christina go up and do it, or maybe have Steven go up and do it. She did say she has liked Steven this whole time, and maybe Steven would have been able to do that a little bit more gracefully, or perhaps Christina was able to do that. We saw them kind of be a challenge duo in the premiere. Maybe Matt just wasn't the right person to bring this up.
Yeah. I think you're probably right, Matt and MC, that's not there. There's no relationship, it feels like, there. Even though, was he the one who said, I like MC, I want it to be MC? Was it him?
Yeah, no, I think the three of them kind of collectively were like, who are we going to get for the fourth? And it was kind of this obvious, we all feel really good about MC.
Yeah.
Which is good for MC. I mean, she's playing probably a pretty good game.
What do you think about Jason here kind of getting overshadowed, being that he was the alternate and had that moment on the beach, and now he's a zero confessional giver here in this episode and was invisible? I think this was one of the first fully invisible people we have seen on Survivor in a very long time, where he wasn't on the screen except for at the challenge.
Yeah, we didn't hear anything from Jason on my fantasy team.
He is. But not even that we didn't hear him. He went full Purple Kelly. People always throw around the word purple. Jason purpled in this episode. He was not there. Like,
did we see him in the previously on? Because all we got from the Yellow Tribe was Matt going like, I don't fit in here. And they talked about Smash Brother, something like that.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe we saw him previously on. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that was an Instagram post, now that I'm thinking.
Yeah, he crushed the puzzle. That's true. He did that and he left, but he was gone. He was absolutely gone.
He got some credit for the, I think Jeff called him out. Like, hey, that's like three puzzles in a row for Jason or something.
Mm-hmm. Cause Christina, even though she was the other zero vote or zero confessional giver, I still knew where Christina stood in this episode. I still knew what Christina was doing. Jason was irrelevant, totally irrelevant. Weird tribe with this Hina tribe. I still don't think it's going to matter. And I think that's why we're barely seeing it. Sophie, I'm mad. I can't believe this is happening. I don't feel like it's really going to matter. Maybe it matters next week, but I just don't feel like it is.
Maybe. I don't know.
Red Tribe, Rizzo, from 12 to 1. My goodness. He only had one confessional night. We didn't hear much from him at all. This was a very quiet night for the Red Tribe, with the exception, really, of Jawan and Savannah.
Yeah, but it feels like, hey, they didn't lose, and we know where they sit. Like, we got this foursome locked in. We got a conversation between Nate and Rizzo. They're feeling good.
Feeling vibes. Fire.
Cinema.
Which Nate and Rizzo both said cinema for the prop bet game, for anybody wondering. Because that was the name of the episode.
That was the name. I don't know why it was the name. Why was the name of the episode cinema? Was this episode cinema?
Yeah.
It was more vibes than cinema.
It was more vibes. They should have called it fire, honestly.
I think vibes would have been a better name for this episode. This episode had vibes, but it wasn't fire, I wouldn't say, and it wasn't cinema.
I will say I have to give Nate some props too here, even though nothing really changed. And I think he spoke maybe once. I really appreciate Nate just going in on the whole, everybody just kind of has time to hear each other's feelings, which is something my generation really didn't do. So I feel like I'm having to feel this out. I also like that Nate's calling that out, because that's like not really how all 30-year-olds are either. I feel like that's just kind of the 30-year-olds they're putting on certain tribes, maybe like this Red Tribe. Nate is saying that as if that's something that like 45 and plus do. There's a lot of 30-year-olds, early 30s, late 30s. It doesn't matter.
But a lot of these people are in their 20s, right? Like, no. Rizzo's in his 20s.
I think he might be the only one.
I
know Savannah's 31.
Yeah. I think cinema is very new. Aura is very new.
Well, that's because of the Scorsese thing.
But wait,
we say vibes.
Vibes is a very common word. But I understand vibes.
Sage is 30, Savannah's 31, Shannon's 27, Jawan's 28. So, I mean, they're not that.
I mean, Phil, we're talking like 5 years, 5 to 6 years younger than us. That's it's a different generation, essentially.
My wife is 28. It's fire. Like, not, I'm just saying, like, she doesn't. Yeah, thanks.
I think fire is.
I hang out with plenty of her friends and they don't just walk around saying fire and vibes. But I also don't think it's just that. I'm not even really pointing out necessarily the words they're using. I'm saying that Nate is calling out the whole, they just want to sit around and like have time for each other's feelings, as if that's a very huge part of being 27 to 35. And I just don't think that that's true for at least
I get what you're saying. Country. Yeah, that's just the vibes of these specific people.
That's just who they're casting, in my opinion. I don't think Will and I would be sitting there going, wow, tell me again about the prayer for the hermit crab. I do it for Survivor's sake, but it would be very obvious, and I'd probably be with Nate over in the corner going, what are we doing right now?
Yeah, how's your aura?
How's your aura? I mean, even what was Sage's story? Sage's story was, what was
would
her story?
Would you say rad, though? What words would we say where we don't think it's weird, but like Nate would still think it's weird?
Probably dope.
Dope, sick. Dope, sick.
Dope, sick. Yeah, okay.
Great TV show.
Way to go. Way to go back to back on that. Sage is telling a story about being the Easter Bunny. I don't really know what that was. And like Dolly Hood says here, Sage is a veteran. When are we going to get that part of the storyline for Sage instead of just that she poops? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know.
I still enjoyed this tribe. I thought this tribe was fun. I thought this was
the red tribe is very fun.
Yeah.
And honestly, for how much we're getting the blue tribe, I don't know if the blue tribe is all that fun.
Uh-uh. But they're better than last year's green tribe. That's for sure.
Probably. Yeah.
Definitely. Other than Say on that green tribe last year, we really didn't hear from anybody the entire season.
Dude, Cedric was goaded, bro. I'm trying to think of more words that we
use. Well, that's what's funny is you're saying words that you think are Gen Z, but then you have to put that.
Not Gen Z. No, I'm saying, what do we say?
You have to put that weird accent on your voice, though, so that people know that you're trying to be.
What slang do we use ourselves that we don't even think is slang because we use it so much? That's what I'm trying to like dig into. And get on it. Cedric, unlimited
aura, bro. I don't know, man. Maybe we could get on. This is how I'm going to eventually get cast on Survivor. Is I'm going to get cast by calling up the casting team and saying, I can't get along with these young Gen Z kids. They throw me off. I don't know what these words mean.
So one of the themes in the 50s is going to be Gen Z versus millennials.
You think so?
Yeah,
and be the people who are not lazy and shape this world just like
Gen X. I mean, we had millennials versus Gen X, and then I think
we had Africa.
You had Gen X versus baby boomers, right?
Remember in Africa, Gen X versus baby boomers, where the Gen Xers did nothing and were lazy and stupid. And then
I mean, it wasn't the theme of the season, but it was discussed on the show.
They
yeah.
built this world. There you go. Anyway,
Unk is not.
Is that good, bad?
That is too new. That is way too new.
Okay, good. It's just new. I don't know what the hell that means either.
That's way too new, nephew.
Yeah. Gen Z would eat. I mean, like, I get what all this stuff means. Unk, I have no idea.
I'm going to crash out the more I keep hearing this.
All right. Anyway, let's go over to Blue because now we can finally talk about what happened with this idol. What was your take on the twist here to the idol? And the fact that they're doing all right, Will's got his hands up. I don't even need to
finish. Yeah, I know. Another one where I can get fired up and be like, Phil, they're not changing that much. I know I yelled at you before being like, these tweaks are small and not that big of a deal, and you're praising them, which good. I'm glad you're happy. But this, like, have to get the idol before tribal council. We have seen this very thing before in the new era. Now, the difference here is that it appears through the wording that if you don't get the idol, that the idol becomes powerless, you can no longer get it. But then you also get your vote back, it seems like, from the wording.
You can't vote at the next tribal council. If you don't get the idol, you can't vote, and the idol is dead.
You can't vote at this tribal council, because at this point, you are going to tribal, assuredly.
Yeah.
So you that's cannot the only way vote you can open this tribal if you like, don't get box the idol. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what I mean. We've seen this timeline before where you have to get the idol within the limit of after the challenge and before you leave for tribal council. I remember being like, that's like almost a whole day. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And then I remember we talked to Adam. He came on. He was like, no, that is difficult on a tribal council, like scramble day, especially only six people, to be able to get out of the way and get the idol without anyone seeing is going to be very, very difficult. And Adam was very in defensive, like, that is a very beware advantage thing. That's not an easy thing to do. But it does appear here, Phil, that if you, let's say Alex didn't get the idol, he would lose his vote for this tribal council. But then it's not like this permanent lost vote that would continue through the pre-merge, mm-hmm. as other beware advantages have done.
And that I like. I think that's a good mix up on this, because again, I hate the idea of Star picks up the thing. Now Star can't vote until the merge, or, you know, if she doesn't find this idol and all that. I think that this is a good twist on it. This is the smaller of the bunch for me. I thought the journey was much improved. This, whatever. I also feel like if you didn't have an army to go in and do this the way that Alex did, this is really, really hard to pull off with this chain and carrying that around and being somewhat hidden. They almost are making this where you can't do this on your own. Almost every other version of the idol we've seen, you can do it somewhat on your own. Even the one where Tiffany did it, she told Kenzie, but, you know, Gabe with the box, Rome with the box, we saw that. In this situation, this is really hard to pull off on your own because you have to be gone for a while. You're carrying around this chain. Maybe you're, I guess you could have brought the box over to the chain though, couldn't you?
I was thinking that too. And then I think it was either, there's probably a rule that says you have to bring the key to the box, or producer tells you that, because that's where the fun is, like carrying this big chain around.
And it's clanging.
Or the box itself is locked like around the tree. And like you can't move that would be the smart way.
Which actually might be true, because it was, there were chains on the box too. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was
wrapped up. But they're not going to let you take it and move it.
Because I appreciated that. Look, the whole rushing it and everything like that. The only thing I like about this is that it's again, removing a little bit of the lost votes. There's still going to be a lost vote here, but it's time restricted. How many questions do we get every time of what if Star never finds it and goes to a different beach? Or what if she hits the merge? What's going to go on? We don't know. This is easy to follow. This is simplifying for a general audience, which I think is a good thing. Sometimes we get a little caught up, and I'm not just saying you and me. I mean, like the Survivor online community as a whole, we get caught up in, we want it to be a little bit more complicated because we can really follow it. For a lot of the people who are watching this show, that's not the case. A lot of them watch it on Wednesday nights. It ends at 9:30 and they're done. They watch it again the next week at 8 and that's it. They don't even talk about it. And so I think this simplifies it. You're not having to sit there and remember, does Alex have a vote? What's going on with Alex? Oh, I can't remember what's going on with this. No, you just know Alex got the idol, done. If he didn't get the idol, you knew he didn't vote this time and that's it. So I think that this is an improvement, even if this is something that's smaller, but I hope that these types of beware advantages start to go this way, where lost votes and stuff like that only last for one episode, not all the time.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I guess, I don't know. The lost votes for the beware advantage to me don't really matter all that much, because like I can't even remember the last time someone hasn't been able to accomplish the task. Like all of these things, like it, they always figure it out, whether it's opening the box and finding the key, whether it's getting beads from people on your tribe. Honestly, I think the only time I remember the beware advantage actually being scary, actually being a beware, you're going to not have a vote for a little bit over multiple tribal councils, is in 41 and 42 with the phrases, where you are, you know, beholden to another tribe finding the idol and then deciding to say the phrase at the challenge. That's the only time where it's really been scary. Other than that, all these missions have been very, very doable. You're gonna figure it out, and sure, you can add a time restraint, but it seems like, okay, we're just gonna bring in more people and have us, you know, let's everyone chip in. We'll get our vote back. We'll get the idol. Use it together as an alliance, and that's that. I don't think I'm that worried about the losing of votes.
So I mentioned that I have Once Upon an Island tomorrow. I have Rachel, winner of Survivor 47 on Sunday, and I need your help now, which is, what do you do in this situation now, though, that all four people on the island know Alex has this idol? What happens if this is truly a disaster tribe and they lose again because they can't do a puzzle to save their lives? They're not beating Jason. What happens to this tribe now when they go to tribal council next? Because I think that's a crazy dynamic, not obviously the intended result from Survivor, but because of the way that this twist worked and this advantage worked, and because there was such a time constraint, they couldn't just tell Jeremiah, we're not doing anything. So now all four of them know that this is going on. They're probably going to lose one more time unless there's a swap soon, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we need to talk about the vote before we get to next week if they go. But, like, yeah, I mean, is it 2-2? It's kind of murky because it seems like Jake is number one, is the number one of Sophie and the number one of Alex. So you would imagine Jake is probably in a good spot. And then Jeremiah is kind of floating there. But we've seen Jeremiah and Sophie be pretty close. And honestly, if there's someone on the outs, I would say Alex is probably like the one to watch out for, because Jeremiah and Sophie can get together. And then there's two votes. And they know that the other two are a duo. But Alex does have the idol and people do know about it. So, I mean, it does. That would be a very like kind of a Mexican standoff of a tribal council if those four go next week. And if we don't get any lost votes, if everyone has their votes and there's one idol, does Alex play it? Does he use it? I don't know. We did see and this is kind of why I wanted to like touch on this week's vote. I know it was brutally obvious that Annie.
Oh, yeah.
There was no doubt.
Episode. Yeah. First sentence of the episode, you knew she was going home.
Yeah, and I don't even know from that standpoint. It was mainly like heading into tribal council after we've seen the build and all the conversations, like there was no world in which Alex was going to vote with Annie to vote Sophie, because who would have his third vote have been? Obviously, it can't be Sophie because that's who you're targeting.
He would have had to have played the idol to save Annie. You're not going to do that and piss off everybody else on the tribe.
That's your only. Yeah. And we got like a very small hint of Jeremiah and Alex. Alex kind of brings Jeremiah, and this is after the idol hunt, and goes, Jeremiah, you know, Sophie and Jake are really close. You know, we're going to vote out Annie here, and you and I got to watch each other's backs. And maybe there's something brewing between Jeremiah and Alex, but it seems to me that Jeremiah and Sophie are very much a tighter duo than Jeremiah and Alex. The vote, again, I enjoyed the episode. I think the episode did a lot of things well, but the vote was very cut and dry and had very little suspense going in.
I think that Sophie probably should have tried to make a move here tonight. When she found out with the idol and everything like that. And I think that her, Jeremiah, and Annie could have pulled one over on Jake. But
there's no way.
But here's my thinking on this. Now you're at...
Oh, I thought the move that you would want to do is...
Actually vote out Alex.
Vote out Alex. Now that he has this idol...
But Annie was never going to get on board.
He's not going to play it right when he finds it, especially because he feels like he's so in with the majority.
Yeah. But
right. We know that, you know, as an audience, we know Annie and Alex have this very close relationship. So, I don't know. And, yeah. And especially if you're... Even to target Jake, like, I just don't think... I think at this point, Annie was so dead set on voting Sophie. I don't think Sophie is ever going to get Annie's vote as a number here. I don't think there's any world of like the move. If she really wanted to make a move, Bill, I think she has to get Jeremiah, obviously. And then you have to get Jake and say, Jake, we can't let Alex have this idol. And like, that would be your convincing. But then Jake, you might scare Jake. He's your number one. I don't think there really was anything Sophie could have done here.
Yeah, I think Jeremiah is toast on this tribe next week then, or the next time they go. If they go next week, Jeremiah is done. Because I think that Alex, I think Jake will go to bat for Sophie, and Jake will be pissed at Alex if Alex were to play the idol to make sure Sophie goes. And I think Sophie is smart enough, and I think she showed it tonight, where even when it doesn't necessarily feel good to have to go a certain way, she wanted Annie out of the game. That's fine. But when she started to pick up kind of on what was going on, and now Alex having the idol, that's not good for me. She's trying to lie to all of them and pick up the idol without them noticing. She's recovering the box after she finds it, hoping that nobody's going to notice. She is playing, but she's also realizing when to be passive. She knows that she has to get to she has to get through the next vote and get to three, and then hope that she can convince Jake to vote out Alex and not let Alex see it coming. And he goes home with the idol. And I think Sophie, that's the type of game that she needs to play, and she's smart enough to do that. So I think Jeremiah, unfortunately, even though he's probably closer to being Sophie's number one, he's toast if they lose next time.
Yeah, I think, you know, at some point it's going to – Jake has to decide, like, is he going to play with Alex long-term, or is he going to play with Sophie long-term? And, like, that might – he might have to make that decision sooner than he thinks.
Yeah.
But you can't be out here with two number ones. And we got it very clear tonight. Like, he has two number ones. He's like, it's potato, potato. Like, that can't last.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about in the preview? People are bringing it up. Jake getting potentially bit by this snake in the water.
Yeah, those are actually some of the most, like, venomous, poisonous snakes in the world. The banded sea crate. However, they can only... What is it? They can only, like... deliver the venom. Is it deliver the venom? They can only bite you, or they can only sink their teeth deep enough in. If they bite you in like they divide you into very specific places, and I'm trying to think of I can think of one of them. One is between your fingers, the webbing of your fingers, because your skin is so thin. They have very small teeth that they can bite you, like right between that webbing. I think there's one other spot. Maybe it's the webbing between your ear and your neck. But you basically, they have to bite you in such a specific place for it to deliver venom that, like, he's going to be fine.
And I'm sure they have antivenom and stuff there.
Yes, especially when you're shooting a show in Fiji, where is like their most, this is like their most famous wildlife creature.
Yeah. You know, like people are,
they have a lot of, Fiji has a lot of bats, which is cool. But like the banded sea crate is like their kind of iconic, deadly, venomous animal. Yeah, and there you go.
People are losing it because of the shoe bandit potentially being knocked out here. And the last 10 minutes of comments in the chat have just been shoe bandit, shoe bandit, shoe bandit, shoe bandit, shoe bandit. So what do you think, Will? Shoe bandit worthwhile or no? The shoes just keep moving.
I'm just so out on, like, what to what end? Like, what is the point here? I don't think it's pissing anyone. Like, everyone at this point is like, wait, that happened with Nicole's shoe. Oh, that happened with my shoe. Like they're
obviously
it's not production. I wish there were like a reason for all this. Like, I wish this had like an end game, and to have it be like, oh, haha, look at me, I want screen time, this is fun. Like, I don't know.
It's you not, see this, it's not, you will see this?
Take, oh my god. Oh, L
take. Will L take, oh my god, no. Take.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't hate it. I'm not like sitting there like, get this off my screen, but it's not really, it's very surface level. There's no depth. I don't feel like there's much we need to like break down. Like, where is this going? Where could this lead? Like, is this foreshadowing for something big? Is this ever going to influence the game or a vote or character draw? Like, everyone's gonna know someone's moving shoes, and if he gets caught, he gets caught. And honestly, like, he likes the people he's with now. That's their core four. Is he really gonna keep doing it? Is he gonna do Jeremiah's shoes next? And Jeremiah's gonna be like, all right, well, like, clearly it's one of you. It's not Annie. It's definitely not Nicole. Here's what I'll say, Phil. If the shoe bandit is like predictive of the boot order, that could maybe be somewhat interesting.
Because it has,
like,
been the two.
It has been. It's like Nicole's shoe gets stolen, and then she goes, Annie's shoe gets stolen, and then he gets swapped, and he steals someone's shoe. And then, I mean, at some point, you have to, like, let someone in on it. Because if you get tribe swapped, and you're out there with Jeremiah, and then, like, you know, let's say Sage's shoe goes missing, Jeremiah's going to be like, wait a sec. Like, the only person from my tribe that's with me is Jake, and everyone's shoes go missing. I'm on another tribe and shoes are going missing. Like, Jake is hiding the shoes. Like, you kind of need to bring someone in the loop if your ruse is going to get big and sustained.
Well, and it was even funnier because he's sitting here going, hey, are these, whose shoes are these?
Yeah, he's asking,
like, dry. Okay. And then he just picks up Annie's shoe and throws it in the woods.
Right. Yeah, which
I went an hour and 8 minutes without saying this. Annie hugged Jeff tonight.
Oh yeah, that was a
big moment for the prop bet game. Huge. Dude,
I didn't do a prop bet game this year, man. Bummer.
I know you didn't get in on it. I know. Pridium and I did it. Neither one of us put Annie for this, but there are a couple people who did.
So I'm sure there are. I was probably a pretty wise pick.
Yeah. Annie with the hug on the way out. That was huge. Huge for a lot of people. But yeah, I agree. The shoe bandit stuff, I said it last week. I'm saying it now. I'm still so confused, Jake. Just give me I can't wait to see where it goes.
I don't hate it, but like, where is this going?
Yeah. 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 Anyway. What else? I feel like so much happened. That was an hour and 9 minutes. That was the easiest hour and 9 minutes we've ever had.
Yeah, we just ripped there for a little bit. Do we need to, like, yeah, I mean, we were just kind of flowing. Is there anything we need to, like, really call out and hit? Like, obviously, Annie, this is the right move for everybody.
100%.
Like, I don't think there was anything, like, Jeremiah, I don't think, had a play here. Especially because Annie was, like, so steadfast in that she was dictating what was happening. Like, there was no world in which you were going to, like, approach Annie with a plan that wasn't hers, and then like she wasn't even gonna be able to save herself, honestly.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Funky dynamics with like the four remaining, which is fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, but the shoe bandit's gonna be fine with the snake bite, unless it bit him in a very, very specific part of his body. He will be absolutely fine.
Yeah. And
but that's a good scare. I mean,
being that Jake is still alive, I'm assuming he's gonna be fine.
Yeah, because it will like kill you within like 20 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So
he's good. He's good. Yeah. I don't know if they'd be airing the season still if he had died. And I'm sure we would have heard that somebody died filming Survivor. So he's good. We had a lot of props and stuff. I can do that real quick. Journeys, sure. Juwan, Matt, Jake, obviously. Annie hugged Jeff, Title, Nate, and Rizzo. Sage and Christina with their first sit out of the season. This was your first challenge that ended officially in a puzzle. First one of the season here. Mm-hmm. Savannah had a blurred mouth. She also had that last season or last week. God, I'm already putting her on two seasons. Crazy. But yeah, so Savannah had a mouth blur. So that happened. There's a couple others I got to figure out. Alex had the most confessionals. He had 10. Jake had 8. Juwan, Matt, Savannah, and Sophie B all had 5. Annie, 4. Jeremiah, 3. MC, Shannon, 2. Everybody else had 1 except for Jason and Christina, who had 0. So if you put Jason and Christina for your "we'll get a confessional in every episode," no, they will not. And in terms of loses a vote, nobody did it because they didn't have their vote lost by the time they got there. Annie had 5 votes for the season, so she hits that just like Nicole did last episode. Gets a hidden immunity idol. Alex has that in his possession right now, so that is his. And that's it right now. That is it. I'm looking at my notes here. Yeah, I didn't have anything else. So that's that. Good stuff. Tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time, me and Blake will be live with Once Upon an Island. Wes from Once Upon an Island will be joining us to dig deeper into this episode. On then later tomorrow, John and McKenna will be doing their Survivor Rewind. On Sunday, I will have Rachel, from winner of Survivor 47, joining the podcast for predictions and power rankings at 1 p.m. Eastern time. She finally gets to speak her mind on Blake, which I know is the thing that she's been most dying to do. For sure. Yeah. And what else? And then Tegwith has her next episode of Matt Chat, which is coming out on Monday. But I have so many text messages with Tegwith at this point that I don't remember who it is. So,
oh, come on.
I got to find you. Will, stall for me.
Well, how did Matt Chat go? I have not been able to tune into Matt Chat yet. I had a busy weekend, but I'm sure that's a pretty great game. Name?
Are you ready?
I'm sure Tegwith has like the lineup of all lineups for.
Are you ready? This is speaking of Ghost Island. Are you ready? This is actually going to blow your mind. So episode
Chris
1
Noble?
Was
Lane.
It was awesome. No, earlier than that, Jacob Derwin is joining her.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. So dude, she's going all over the map. I'm not going to spoil who her episode 3, 4, 5 is. Jacob Derwin, episode number 2. Boom. All right. There we go. So that'll be Monday night. So we got plenty of episodes coming your way. If you want to be a patron, patreon.com/thespecialists. We are finishing up Survivor South Pacific. One World starts on Thursday the 9th. So everybody gets stoked for that if you're a top tier patron. Also going to be talking about some horror movies throughout the entirety of October for $5 Tuesdays. We got casting and Survivor Rock Draw episodes, Teg Talks. We just did a one-time player draft, myself, Tegwith, and Ryan. We got Australian Survivor coverage. I'm done with my watch of Australian Survivor. Now I'm going to start doing some fun, different kinds of episodes. I'm doing a wrap-up of kind of all of it this week, and then I'll start getting into some of my favorite players, moments, things like that, to keep that going on Fridays. Q&As. Will and I have one coming out Friday. That was fun. We talked about baseball and football. Anyway. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Like this video, subscribe to the channel, and I will see you tomorrow at 5 p.m.
See ya.